It is the WRMJ Sports Line on a Saturday morning as we roll along. A lot to talk about this morning. I know we're in the midst of this COVID-19 pandemic, threat, worry, whatever. Don't have a lot of sports scores to report, but we have a great guest lined up on the WRMJ Sports Line. Tim Egebretson, a great job at the former Warren High School, then, of course, consolidation with United. And I think he told me setting up this interview this week, he's been retired as a classroom teacher, I think, for a couple of years. Tim Egebretson, good morning. You seriously cannot be that old. You're retired now, is that right?
Yep, put out the pasture. Been retired for 2 years now.
So what has been the, you know, there's really probably been two significant adjustments for you. When you walked away from, I shouldn't call it walk away, when you retired or stepped down from coaching, time was right, an adjustment there, and then retiring as a classroom teacher. What is that, those adjustments, what have they been like for you?
Coaching was real hard to begin with just because, you know, and we've talked about this, about your children and my children watching your kids play. It's so much different than coaching. So that was a difficult adjustment. And then the classroom, you know, I finally got settled in that and feeling pretty good about that. And then, you know, that you lose that. It just takes a while to adjust. I don't know how many people I told that retirement wasn't as great as it wasn't all it was cracked up to be. You know, it was cracked up to be, and people would look at me like I was crazy, but it just takes a while to adjust. It took me a good, 9 months after retirement to kind of start feeling comfortable.
So here's a question as we start our conversation. By the way, we're interactive today on Twitter at WRMJ2, at WRMJ2. I know when I told people we were doing this interview, people going crazy said, man, they want to hear Coach Egebretson, but that's the kind of class act he has. What was the toughest thing for you? To when we say, you know, you have to be a fan now, you're not a coach. So when you were, you know, a guy that coached a long time at Warren and United, kids played at Knoxville, you lived in Knoxville, so you'd go to see the Blue Bullet games, basketball or football, baseball, whatever, watching your kids play. What type of fan do you think you were? Maybe this is a tough question.
I was a horrible fan. You've got no outlet anymore. You know, when I was coaching, you could watch film, you could prepare, you could, you know, strategize, you could adjust, you could talk to all your fellow coaches, and when it's your kids playing, you just sit there and watch, and you've got no control. And I really tried to be, you know, when I was little, when my kids were little, I tried to get, you know, I tried to help them out and do stuff. I really tried to be hands off when my kids got older and let them just enjoy their experience. And it's hard, you know, you just don't. It's hard to sit back and enjoy it, and I just hate myself for not enjoying it more, you know, because you're on edge. And a lot of people I know did enjoy it and had really good experiences. I wasn't one of them. it was just difficult to not be able to say anything, do anything, and have no, you know, not be able to make a difference in what they're doing. It was some troubling times.
Yeah, well, and I guess that's the thing. You have to walk a fine line between being a parent, you know, a fan, and then you're a former coach. So do you have the right to kind of second guess strategy that's going on the field? And then there's that factor where some other parent, where you're watching the Blue Bullets playing, and then some other parent comes up to Tim Egebretson and says, hey, we should probably be doing this, right? I'm sure you probably had some of those type of conversations, right?
Yeah, a little bit, but you know, most people I knew how, you know, in our system in football, we were so basic that you know, you don't second guess other people, and we keep it as general as we did. And then I hadn't coached basketball in so long; it had been such a long time since I'd coached basketball at the high school level. It was really different there, but not as much as you'd think. You know, again, I think as people knew it, we were just such a basic team that they didn't really want to talk to me about my philosophies or strategies.
So you stopped coaching your last year as a varsity. Now, I know you came back and coached a couple of years as a junior high basketball coach after you retired as the head varsity football coach at United. So what was the last year you coached varsity football there?
2011.
So we're talking about 9, almost 10 years now. Have you noticed a significant change in the game? You know, just what you watch, maybe not strategy, but I don't know. I mean, is there anything that really stands out where you say, man, even when you look at when I coach back, in 2009 or 2010, it's a lot different now in 2019, 2020.
Yeah, and it started probably 2005, 2006, where I started noticing drastic changes, how so many more people were going to the spread and moving things around and throwing the ball so much more. And then now it's just, you know, I think it's, you know, a huge percent compared to what it was. You know, when I started coaching, everyone was running wing T or wishbone or, you know, a form of one of those two offenses. And then people started running a little bit. You know, Tuscola was the Tuscola and actually Aledo, you know, were the few teams that did it and did it really well. Then so many people started changing that philosophy, and so many people are doing it really well now. It's drastically different than when I started, and even not drastically, but quite a bit different since I retired.
All right, Tim Agabretson again, the longtime head coach at the former Warren High School and then United. And it's always interesting, and we dealt with it here in Aledo with consolidation with Aledo and Westmer, and you talk about, you know, kind of the proud traditions that you had with Warren and Alexis, and then you bring in Yorkwood into the fold. Just a little bit about your observations about when that was going down, because I know it's such a delicate equation when you're dealing with those type of histories and traditions and then bringing them together at one. So take us back when that was all going down and what you remember most about that.
I remember the first one, the consolidation between Alexis and Warren, and you know, a lot of people weren't crazy about it. And, you know, Jim, I can't remember where you grew up, but I grew up in a small town, and I understood every point of that everyone was making. You know, you lose your identity, you lose some of your downtown, you lose different things that you're experiencing. And I know a lot of people weren't crazy about it, but there was enough people that knew it was the right thing and that we needed to do it. And I think our administrators on both ends did such a good job putting it together. And I think that the staffs from both schools did such a good job of coming together. I think that made it easier for the kids. But I talked about it so many times when we consolidated, I just couldn't believe the kids weren't comfortable with it and they weren't crazy about it. But once it happened, they really, really bought in and they really, you know, got to know each other really good. And they just gelled like, I just couldn't believe how well they did. And, you know, kids are very resilient on different things. And I thought they, once it happened, they were outstanding and made a huge difference in how well that consolidation was going to work.
And how much do you think sports played into the smooth transition part? How important was that, you think?
I think it was tremendous. And I, you know, I'm one of those knuckleheads that my world revolves around sports, but I just think that, you know, the girls volleyball team did outstanding. The football team did well. So I think those two, you know, the first two sports programs in the fall doing so well, I think it made a huge difference and got people to know each other a little bit in a positive sense. Although we started 0-2, it probably wasn't so great, but I think it was, I think that was a huge factor, and you know, sports can do that, you know, and I'm watching nonstop ESPN and Big Ten Network and things right now, and they talk about, you know, the different sports makes, and I really think it does. I think it made a tremendous difference.
All right, back to Tim Agabretson, the dad. So, you brought up a point, and you kind of described my situation with my kids where you have these expectations and you want this success for them maybe more than they want, you know what I'm saying? And then it gets over and you're like, man, did I approach this thing the right way as a parent watching my kids play? And I sit back and watch some of these games now and I say to myself, man, if I could just watch Ty or Tess play one more game. You know what I'm saying? Because I remember my son, his last game. I'm still mad at Knoxville because my son's last game was down at that stupid shoebox in Monmouth, and he was like 1-for-21 from the field that night, and they lose to Knoxville. And I was, as a parent, I was just upset at the way it ended. And I remember Coach Hutton, who was the coach at Mercer County at the time, we were waiting in the lobby area at Monmouth Roosevelt High School, and he went up and he hugged him. And I'm like, man, what a freaking dummy I am. I've approached this the wrong way for my whole life, and now I wish the kid was just playing one more time. And the same with my daughter when she played at Mercer County. But maybe that's kind of the way it's supposed to be. Those are the teachable learning moments for us as parents, I guess, is you learn that after the fact. So I guess my advice to parents is, man, you need to enjoy it because once it's over, you're going to be wishing you could watch your kid play one more time. Long story short, right?
No, for sure. I've noticed that, you know, we in Knoxville, we have such a great following of grandparents. And I watched the grandparents over the years, and they do have a different, you know, a way of handling their grandchildren. And I'm like, they're getting a second chance, and they're doing a little bit different. And I, you know, I'm with you on that. I'm just like, I just wish I could have enjoyed it more. And you don't, you know, we like to say we didn't want to have a negative effect on our children, and we didn't want to have them feel our anxieties or feel our uncomfortable, you know, situations when we were worried about them and succeeding and so on. But the kids feel that, and they have a sense of it, and that's what I didn't want to do. But you know you're going to do it a little bit. And I think the kids pick up on that a little bit and maybe hurts their experience a little bit as well. But I watch the grandparents like, ooh, they've got it figured out. It just takes two times sometimes.
Yeah. All right. So you grew up where then? You went to high school in Illinois?
Forston, Illinois.
Oh, you were a Northwest Upstate Illini kid then. I didn't know that. Oh, man.
Well, and back then we was before, you know, it's funny because the, you know, the Dakotas and the Lee Winds and the Stocktons and so on. We actually were in the Route 72 conference with Oregon and Stillman Valley and Byron. And before some of those schools got a little bit bigger, we weren't in the Northwest Illinois. And it's funny how, you know, Dakota and Lee Winds, those people have so much success. Now, when I was up there, Stockton was the school. But all those other ones, Akron was up and down, but Dakota and Lee Wynn were nothing special in football. So it's kind of funny to see them, you know, be so dominant now in these last couple decades.
So I didn't realize that. So then how special was that for you in 2004? Because United in that state championship run, right? You played Stockton in the state title game, right?
Yes. In fact, my brother lost versus Stockton in the playoffs when he was 3 years older than me, and they lost to Stockton. So it was a little revenge. And I remember sitting in the front row of that game versus Stockton, and they kind of think they invented football up there. So it was nice to beat them.
That's a burn on them. All right. So when did you know that you wanted to teach and coach? I mean, was it like, were you still a kid and said, hey, this is my calling, this is what I want to do? So take us through kind of your career path. Where did you start teaching at and coaching at?
Well, I started it at Hebron, Illinois, and it was easy to, you know, the person that affected me most was a family friend. His name was Rusty Egan, and just a man I looked up to a great deal. I looked up to his son. He was a couple years older than me. And, you know, sports is small town sports. That's all we ever did was play, you know, myself and all my buddies. And it was something that I'm like, I looked at, you know, the same young man I was talking about, my idol son was a carpenter. So I thought, you know, that's something I might want to go into. And I wasn't very skilled and wasn't very good at it. I even went to the GAVC type of thing, you know, vocational school in Sterling, Illinois, and I just wasn't very good at it. I'm like, what do I like? And the only thing I liked was sports. So I thought that had to be the route I would go. And I got a phys ed, major and a health minor and kind of never looked back. It was from the get-go. And I did some coaching even when I was in high school with little league baseball and so on and so forth. It was just something that I always really enjoyed. And I'm just really glad I took that route.
So your first teaching job, did you say was in Hebron? Is that where was that?
Yes.
So you coached
at one
of the most famous sports stories in Illinois. You got to coach and drink in some of that history, I assume, right? With the Hebron Green Giants that won the state title back in 1952 with, what, like 67 or 68 some odd kids?
Yeah. And the funny thing is the kids weren't crazed about that because that's all they ever heard about. If they ever said they were from Hebron, that's what they had to hear about. They weren't enamored with it, but I thought it was really cool. And a man I coached with, Sonny Katzenberg, was from the area. He's a Richmond grad, and then he lived in Lake Geneva. But he knew all the history. He knew some of those players from that Hebron team. And so he was kind of a local historian as well as a coach. So I got to learn a lot about it and got to meet some of those guys. And they were on that team. And it was pretty special. It was a neat little place. And it was kind of interesting that Hebron was, you know, very close to Woodstock and Crystal Lake and those schools all started blowing up about that time. You know, like, well, Huntley is a good example. When I was up there, Huntley was a school of 200, and now I think they're a school of like 2,000. So it just blew up, but Hebron never did. It stayed the same, and it's still that way. It's still very small and kind of they're a little stuck up there near Harvard, and I think it's kind of cool that they've stayed a small school even though everyone else around them is blown up.
Well, and it's interesting now because I think today when you talk about Hebron, that's kind of the godfather of eight-man football with Mike Lawler's brother up there, John Lawler, at Alden Hebron now. What's your take on eight-man football?
I think it's great because it, you know, some schools just can't field a team anymore. In fact, John's a friend of mine. We coached together up there at Hebron, and he's done so much for that little town, that program. I just think I'd really like to see. I hate to see people go to it if they don't have to, but once they have to, I just think it's really neat. And it's an interesting game. I've only seen a few of the games, but you know how open it is and how spread it is and how much scoring there is. I think it's an awesome opportunity for kids because I just hate to see someone lose an opportunity.